In the Lord's navel he saw the sky. In the Lord's waist he saw the seven oceans. And on the Lord's bosom he saw all the clusters of stars. Text 25 to 29. Hidyangadharman stanojar murarer ritancha satyancha manasya tendum srijam chabakshasya ravindahastam kante chasamanani samastarepam indra pradanam amaram buddheshu tatkarna yok kakubod yascha murdhim murni chacheshu megna megdan chvashanam nasikayam aksno chashuryam badane chabahim banyam chachandamsi rase jalesham brubhor nishedam chabidhin chapakshmashu ahas charatrin chaparasya punsom manyun lalate dhara eva lobam Isparsichakkanam nriparretashva Prishte twadarman krameneshu jagyam Chajasho mrityum hashite chamayam Tanuriheshu asa aushadhi jatajascha Nadischa nadishu shila nakeshu Buddhao ajam devaganam rishimsha praneshu gatre stira jangamani sarvani bhutani dadarshavira. Translation. My dear king, on the heart of Lord Murari he saw religion, on the chest both pleasing words and truthfulness, in the mind the moon, on the bosom the goddess of fortune with a lotus flower in her hand, on the neck all the Vedas and all sound vibrations, on the arms all the demigods headed by King Indra, in both ears all the directions, on the head the upper planetary system, on the hair the clouds, in the nostrils the wind, on the eyes the sun, and in the mouth fire. From his words came all the Vedic mantras. On his tongue was the demigod of water, Varuna Deva. On his eyebrow were the regulated principles. And on his eyelids were the day and night. When his eyes were open, it was daytime. And when they were closed, it was night. On his forehead was anger. And on his lips was greed. O king, in his touch were lusty desires, in his seeming were all the waters, on his back was irreligion, and in his wonderful activities or steps was the fire of sacrifice, on his shadows was death, in his smile was the illusory energy, and on the hairs of his body were all the drugs and herbs, in his veins were all the rivers, on his nails were all the stones, on his intelligence were Lord Brahma, the demigods, and the greatly saintly persons, and throughout his entire body and senses were all living entities, moving and stationary. Bali Maharaj thus saw everything in the gigantic body of the Lord. Text story. Sarva madidam bhuvanam niriksha sarve shurakash malan apuranga sudarshanam chakram asahyo teyo danuscha sringam stanijitnugosham. Translation. O king, when all demons, the followers of Bali Maharaj Bali, saw the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who held everything within his body, when they saw in the Lord's hand his disc known as Sudarshan Chakra, which generates intolerable heat, and when they hear the tumultuous sound of his ball, all this caused lamentation within their hearts. Text 31. Parjanya gosho jalaja pachan pachajan pachanjanja kaumo daki vishnu gadatari shwini vidyadrasti satachakdra yuktas dunotama akshajajsajukaucha. Translation: the Lord's conch shell named Panchajanya, which made sounds like that of a cloud, the very forceful club named Kamodaki, the sword named Vidyadhara, with a shield decorated with hundreds of moon-like spots, and also Akshayashaka, the base of quivers, all these appear together to offer prayers to the Lord. And text number 32 and 33. So we read 32, I believe, together. Sunandamukhya upatastur isham Parshadamukhya shahalokapala Spurakiritangada mina kundala Srivatsaratno tamame kalambarai Sunandamukhya upatastur isham Parshadamukhya sahalokapala Spurat kiritangadami nakundala Srivatsaratno tamame kalambarai Sunandamukhya upatasturisham Parshadamukhya shahalokapala Spurat kiritangadami nandkundala Srivatsaratno tamame kalambarai. Please chant. text number 33. Madhubratasrak manamala jabrito raraja rajam bhagavan urukrama shitim padaike nabaler bichakrame nabasharinena dishascha bat hubhi. And word by word. Sunandamukhya. The associates of the Lord headed by Sunanda. Upastatu. Began to offer prayers. Isham. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parshadamukhya. Other chiefs of the associates. Shahalokapala, with the predominating deities of all the planets. Spuratkirita, with a brilliant helmet. Angada, bracelets. Minakundalaha, and earrings in the shape of a fish. Srivatsa, the hair named Srivatsa on his bosom. Ratna Uttama, the best of jewels, Kostuba. Mekala, belt. Ambarai, with yellow garments. Madhubrata, of bees. Shrak, in which they wear a garland. Banamalaya, by a flower garland. Abritaha, cover. Raraja, predominantly manifested. Rajam, O King. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Urakramaha, who is prominent by his wonderful activities. Shitim, the whole surface of the world. Pada ekena, by one's footstep. Balehe, of Bali Maharaj. Vichakrame, cover. Nabha, the sky. Sarirena, by his body. Dishacha, and all directions. Bahubhi, by his arms. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This associate headed by Sunanda and other chief associates and accompanied by all the predominating deities of the various planets offer prayers to the Lord who wore a brilliant helmet, bracelets, and glittering earrings that resemble a fish. On the Lord's bosom were at the lock of hair called Srivatsa and the transcendental jewel named Kaustubha. He wore a yellow garment covered with a belt, and he was decorated by a flower garland surrounded by bees. Manifested himself in this way, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities are wonderful, covered the entire surface of the earth with one footstep, the sky with his body, and all directions with his arms. Purport. One may argue it. Since Bali Maharaj promised Vamanadev only the land occupied by his steps, why did Lord Vamanadev occupy the sky also? In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami says that the steps include everything, downward and upward. When one stands up, he certainly occupies certain parts of the sky with certain portions of his and certain portions of the earth below his feet. Thus, There were nothing uncommon for the Supreme Personality of Godhead when He occupied the entire sky with His body. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Rupa Swami. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Manchakalpa Tarubhyasha Kripasindhu Vyayvacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, the first time I visit India, I was first went to Bombay, at that time Bombay, Mumbai now. And we were staying in this flat that was that some devotee friends allowed us to stay. So as my wife and I come down into the streets of this area in Mumbai called Borivali, we're walking, and then I see this poster in the wall of this form of Lord Vishnu with a face pasted on of a, you know, sort of fattish fellow, and the top say Jimmy Bhagavan. He had this Western name. He was not, you know, an Indian. Maybe his name was, I don't know, Jagadish or Jambu or something, but he made himself Jimmy. So he was Jimmy Bhagavan. And besides him, it was the goddess of fortune with the face of a fattish lady. He didn't have a name, but he had the fattish lady, you know, pasted into the form of Lakshmi Devi. So they are Jimmy Bhagavan and whoever his wife was as Lakshmi Devi, and there was the invitation to come to this this Sangha with Bhagavan, Jimmy Bhagavan. So it's a very common thing in India of so many self-claim incarnations of the Personality of Godhead. We have so many cases of living gods in India. I just quickly did a search of so many of the famous ones. Actually, there's 7 of them that are in jail right now. Say, you know, Bhagavans, self-claimed incarnations. That most of them were put in jail because of sexually, you know, molesting other people, you know, from children to adults. And some of them are in jail for some illegal acts, you know, of stealing money or things like that, or cheating people. They were caught. And all these Bhagavans that actually were have big followers, people that fully accept them and have full faith and actually were able to see, you know, great miracles according to their experience. They have some sort of a religious experience with these people. That they're certainly ended, you know, in a situation that was not very godlike, like in jail. And there was a case too. Actually, this is happening, you know, recently, of a poor fellow that he necessarily didn't claim his God, just people is trying to tell him that he was God. He actually was an incarnation of Hanuman. Because the poor fellow had was a very poor person who will pick tea leaves. So he will his work was to climb trees. He was very expert in climbing the trees and then picking leaves for that were used for tea. But he has a degenerative disease that somehow that he developed a tail. So he had, you know, like a tail this length, this size. A man, you know, a poor guy with some, you know, some malfunction or something that was, you know, that he developed a tail. He had a tail from birth. And then people say, he's, you know, they put the two things together. He climbs a tree very expertly. He have a tail. He's Hanuman. So they're starting to, you know, you know, he's Hanuman. He's an incarnation of Hanuman. Somehow that they start to, yeah, there's an incarnation of Hanuman in the other town. And then people, oh, this poor fellow, you know, people will come to him and then will touch his feet, trying to ask him for benedictions, and he, you know, given a donation, he just, you know, took it. And there were cases even of somehow or other, this woman claims that his child got cured by the blessings of this poor person who was, you know, declared to be Hanuman. So, story short, there is all these different, either by self-proclaiming or by popular vote, that there is all these manifestations or incarnations of the personality of Godhead. You know, you read also about this famous Satya Sai Baba, who was claimed to be also self-proclaimed that he was the personality of Godhead, and he sustained his claim by performing all kinds of, you know, externally appears to be very miraculous things, such as produce this ash, sacrificial ash from, you know, his hand out of nothing. He would just go like, and then would come ash in his hand, you know, like when you do this fire sacrifice, and then that ash that is put, you know, in your forehead. So he produced that out of his finger, and then placed, you know, the dot in people's forehead. It's God. And he will also produce, you know, some jewels out of, here's a jewel, and then give a gift to people, you know, like some sort of prasadam gift. So he was a very, you know, he became a very powerful, influential person. But through his life also, there was all kinds of accusations that came from followers of accusation of being a pedophile. Now, one may say, well, maybe envious people, but nevertheless, however it is, truth or not, he died of his different like organs, you know, just collapse. So he died a very painful death. So there is God dying a very painful death. You know, Krishna disappeared out of the world by someone pinching with an arrow his toe. You know, even hit, you know, so his toe was with an arrow, and then he just went like, and then there's a picture of him just floating, you know, in the sky and going away like that. But So, many incarnations of God. In the West also we have that. Not only in India, but in the West, how many people claim, really, that being either the modern appearance of Lord Jesus? We have my wife and Jai Gauranita Prabhu having association with the associates of a so-called manifestation, living manifestation of Lord Jesus in the world. Isn't it? The person claimed this and he have tons of followers. He is Jesus. And people believe it. People accept it. And so many. There's some that claims to be Jesus. Like, for example, there's some that are very dangerous, like Jim Jones claimed to be. He one of the things when back in time, one of the things that I remember, he said, if you want me to be your God, I am your God. If you want me to be your Jesus, I am your Jesus. And things like that. And obviously, we know the story. He just killed all these people because they believe so much in him. And so on. There's so many people that claim, self-proclaim gods. And there's other that even grows, you know, that goes not necessarily using religion, but they are dictators, murderers, that they claim to be the representative of the, you know, they know God, you know, they're the messengers of God. Like there was this guy who was this African, what was his name? Let me see here, actually. Joseph Kony. You heard about that guy? The Joseph Kony was this guy who was he was the leader, I think, in Uganda, the leader of the guerrilla, you know, warfare, you know, people there that they used to take children and things like that. Anyway, a guy that killed thousands and thousands of people, and you know, anyway, he's now condemned, you know, with crimes for humanity, you know. Anyway, he used to claim like that, and then those are the claims that are very gross. Then there's the subtle ones that we find in this world nowadays, that is, have this extreme egotism that they claim to be on the top of the world, very powerful controllers. They have it all together and they're always right. Like, AKA our, you know, new president, you know, is everything is on this is control. They're powerful. People follower, whatever they want, they can achieve. You know, and indeed, you know, they have certain power, you know, and capacity. I mean, you have to give kudos to this guy, who, you know, no one could imagine, you know, several years ago that this guy will be a president. But he say, I will be president, and hey, he became a president. You know, so the guy, you know, is a powerful achiever. So, and he have this vibe. He is in control. He is supreme. You know, so it's subtle, but it's there. So, the sages and the great personalities, the great learned personalities in history, have taught us that there are things that qualify an incarnation or an appearance, a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this world. And they explain that it have to be revealed in the scriptures. The scriptures actually tell us of all the appearance of the Lord. They're already there. They are recorded in the scriptures. In some cases, it's very detailed. It tells you almost by, like, for example, in the Vayu Purana, Lord Chaitanya's incarnation is very clearly said by giving the name of his mother, the son of Sachi. His mother was named Sachi. And he will appear in a town in the Navadvip. The town is named Navadvip. And he also explained who will be his activities. He will spread the Harinam Sankirtan throughout, every town and village. So sometimes it goes that exact, like in the incarnation of Lord Buddha also is explained by name even. But sometimes the scriptures just tells you a description of his body features that is very clear. You can recognize. So in the scriptures, you can recognize he's there, he's recorded. But also, there's a very prominent way of recognizing in this that the scriptures tell us of recognizing the incarnations of the Lord, which is by the manifestation of the universal form. And it becomes fantastic in terms when we get to know, like Srila Prabhupada writes this. This is a commentary that Prabhupada gave in Second Canto, Chapter 1, Text 24. And in the second canto, there's a description of the universal form, meditation, the meditation on the universal form. So Prabhupada explains, this Virat Rupa of the Lord was especially manifested not for the benefit of Arjuna, but for that unintelligent class of men who accept anyone and everyone as an incarnation of the Lord and so misled the general mass of people. For them, the indication is that one should ask the cheap incarnation to exhibit his Virat Rupa and thus establish as an incarnation. And thus be established as an incarnation. So it's a fantastic way to actually test the so-called incarnations. You ask, oh, Bhagavan, accept my humble obeisances, kindly show me your universal form. And then that naturally will put the cheap incarnation in the situation that they will have to acknowledge that how can I show that? So that would put that into place. So it is explained in Krishna's pastimes that he showed this universal form 5 times. Any of you knows this 5 times? Krishna, in his pastimes, when he came, 5,000 years ago, in 5 occasions, this is in the Mahabharata, in 5 occasions, well, Mahabharata and also the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is 3 occasions that I point out there. Actually, 3 or 4. But there's 5 altogether. Mother Yasoda, Peter, that's one. Well, that's Vamanadev, not Krishna. But Krishna was five times. Yeah. To Arjuna in the Battle of Kurukshetra. To Duryodhana in the court of the Kurus. There's one that was also in Krishna's babyhood. Okay. He showed that universal form. The first one that was described was to Mother Yasoda also. After Krishna was taken by Trinivarta, and you know, Krishna became very heavy and Trinivarta was killed. After that, Mother Yasoda took baby Krishna and she was holding baby Krishna in his lap, in her arms, and was feeding him breast milk. And like a baby, you know, he took the breast milk and he was very happy. Mother Yasoda was, you know, patting him and seeing his beautiful face. And then he goes like, he yawned, you know, like a little beautiful baby, yawned. And then she saw the universal form. Her heart, you know, got all beating, you know, and she was surprised and then, you know, closed her eyes and then shake the thing away, you know. But she was able to see the same, that's whole description that is there, all the planetary systems, all the mountains and, you know, time and, you know, the whole thing in the little baby's yawning mouth. And then it came the past, and that was the first time. Then the second time was during Mother Yasoda checking on Krishna's mouth after he ate dirt. So she saw same thing, the whole universal manifestation. She even saw herself looking at Krishna's mouth within the Krishna's mouth. So she was very bewildered too. And then the third time was in the battlefield Kurukshetra. The third time was before the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Krishna went into the assembly of the Kurus as Shantidut, the messenger of peace. He was trying to avoid this fratricidal war. But Duryodhana was so envious that not only he didn't accept the proposals of Krishna, but he asked, you know, he sent his guard to arrest him and tied him. And Krishna laughed. And he manifested this gigantic universal form. It was not, Prabhupada explained that it was not the full, it was just a partial manifestation of the universal form. But he grew gigantic, and then, you know, it is explained that he manifested many arms, and in many arms there were these invincible weapons, and all these weapons were so bright that, you know, it was, you know, blinding, you know, effulgence. And then from his mouth and all his pores was fire, from his forehead you can see Lord Brahma, and his chest there was Lord Shiva, and all his arms there was all kinds of demigods manifesting. And Duryodhana and all the different kings, they got so scared that they closed their eyes. They saw this and they closed their eyes. They couldn't withhold that whole thing, that manifestation. There were only five persons in the assembly that remained and were able to maintain that darshan. And they were Bhishma, Dhritarashtra got it to see later. It's true, Dhritarashtra was one, but not one of the five. Dhritarashtra got it later, you know. But the five was, Bhishma was one, Dronacharya, Vidura, Sanjay, And who was the fifth one? Sanjay. And I can't remember the fifth one. Maybe Kripacharya, you know, there were five of them. So, and then Dhritarashtra, when he heard all the commotion, and he's a blind guy, he couldn't see anything, and he, you know, then he prayed to Krishna, you know, like, please, can I see? And then Krishna gave him that Divya Chakshu that he gave Arjuna, so he was able to see for a moment. So Dhritarashtra also saw. So then it came the universal form manifestation in the battlefield Kurukshetra. And this was a very special manifestation because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, you're going to see a form that no one has seen before. So he actually gave Arjuna the complete full thing, the full darshan of the universal form, and one that haven't seen before. So Arjuna was the first one to see the complete show. And but one may ask herself, okay, I tell you the fifth one and then I go back to this. The fifth one was after the battlefield of Kurukshetra. In the Mahabharata is explained, when Krishna was on his way back from Hastinapuri to Dwarka, he stopped at sage Uttanda, this sage ashram. He stopped, and as he was having some exchanges with this sage, the sage asking about the events, and Krishna was telling him all the things that happens during the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And Uttanda Muni, he is starting to become a bit upset because he thought, Krishna, why you didn't stop this world? I mean, 600 million people die. Basically, you wiped out the whole, you know, kings of the world. So, and why do you allow this? You have the power to stop it. Why do you allow it? So the sage was starting to be upset at Krishna. And he got so heated, you know, and disturbed about this, that he decided that you deserve to be cursed. So he wanted to curse Krishna. And Krishna saying, no, but don't waste your curse. It's not going to do anything. You know, like, I'm God, you know, so it's not going to do anything. And the sage was doubting no, you can counteract my curse. And then Krishna say, well, I may have to show you my universal form. So he manifested the universal form to this sage Uttanda. And when the sage was able to see this form, then he got, you know, he offered prayers. But there was something very common about all these devotees who were able to take darshan of the universal form, that all of them, Mother Yasoda, Arjuna, and in the case of the Kurus, they didn't ask Krishna. But in the case of Mother Yasoda, in the case of Arjuna, in the case of Sage Uttanda, they requested Krishna, please withdraw it. I just want to see you in your beautiful, you know, two-arm form. So, for the devotee, the universal form is not very important. You know, because Krishna is their loving object for the devotee. You know, Krishna in his beautiful form. You can have a relationship with the universal form. That everybody who have darshan of the universal form, they just basically freaked out. It's completely overwhelming. And so Krishna manifests this form simply for the benefit of people in general. That's the explanation. And not only that, he also do it in such a way that there's no doubt. Because in the case of Arjuna, one may ask, well, would you, you know, consider Krishna creating an illusion, you know, and making Arjuna believe he's seeing this? You know? Or maybe Arjuna, you know, I mean, you see it, people, you know, wanted to believe something so hard and they see extraordinary things that really are just like an illusion. So maybe that happened to Arjuna. But it is explained in the Mahabharata that not only Arjuna saw, but also the demigods. Some demigods were able to see. They were also given the eyes to see. So there's always many witness to this. In the case of Lord Vamanadev, there was, you know, all this witness of this universal manifestation. And so on. So this is there. That is a very important proof of Krishna's divinity. So so then for people who are whose God consciousness is not developed or mature, this is a very important understanding of the supremacy of the Lord. So there is this universal form. And there is different, basically, these are all descriptions of a universal form that is basically indescribable. It's impossible to describe. That, you know, even just to imagine it, you know, it's like, okay, the needs are all the birds. So you put all the birds of the that you know, you get one of those biology books, you know, that have all the bird species and then pile them all together and then, okay, that must be the knee of the universal form. And then the thighs are all the hairs together. So, okay. Forget Krishna. Govinda, Govindi Purushan, Janai. So, it's indescribable. But there's descriptions just to, you know, understand. But one thing that we can understand is that there is this material manifestation. So there's a universe, and this universe, just like is made of this all these material elements, you know, five gross and three subtle elements. So these material elements that are there, and just like in this body, is made of material elements, and there is a soul that enters the body and animates it. And then once the soul enters this body, then it goes to all these different changes. So the changes of the body is, you know, it appears, it grows, it remains, dwindles, and then disappears, dies. So similar, this universe is a body, and the soul that enters the body is the Supreme Personality of God and in the form of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. When Lord Vishnu enters into the universe, and then you see him lying in the universe, and from his navel, that whole description, that Garbhodakshay Vishnu is the soul of the universe. So, and then a body manifests, just like this body manifests once the soul enters, you know, the egg, the woman's, you know, the fertilized egg, like that, similar. So we can imagine the experience of the leader cell organism within our body, of someone describing our body to this cell. You know, the cell reality is just whatever, you know, this little environment, that, you know, micro environment in which the cell lives, you know, in our body, because our body is made of unlimited different living things. They're all these living cells and things like that. Very amazing when you, you know, study them. And so for them, the reality of a complete body, it must be also like the reality of us, little tiny living entities that live within the body of the Lord, the universal body of the Lord. Is inconceivable. But that's the reality. The reality is that this is a body that is a temporary body, just like this is a temporary body in which a soul is living. The universal body is a temporary body in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters to facilitate, you know, the material desires of, you know, living entities that are conditioned of falling like that. Any comments or questions? Yes, Madhava Gauranga.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the descriptions of the different types of people that make claim to be God. My question is, it seems like now, at least today, I have experience where people will try to claim that they either can create their own destiny, or they can, you know, there's this one book that I read that it used to be popular. It was called The Secret. It said that the secret of everything is really you desire it and you visualize it and you know, and then it will manifest. And I was thinking, and I came to understand, you know, so you can create your own destiny, you know. And I was wondering what kind of, if people had this kind of philosophy of that, I can actually create whatever I want to do, I can create it, I can just manifest it in front of me. Is this also claiming?
Yeah, it's a subtle divinity issue, you know. Like, I always remember Srila Rabindranath Prabhu. He says this, that we all have a little, you know, tiny God projects. We're like tiny, we have our little God projects. We all have a God project. You know, we want to be God, so we're playing that. It's a whole, you know, a whole bunch of children in nursery trying to play, you know, in a sandbox of, you know, being whatever, the king or something like that. we all have this. It's a common trait that we all share, but in some it's manifest, you know, with great egotism, and some of us are, or you know, our God project is subdued by our, you know, ordeals, you know, our karma. Some people, you know, that they, by their karma, they have some facility, their God project becomes more like, must be right, you know, now I'm God, you know. For some of us, you know, that it just doesn't happen, you know, we're subdued, well, I guess, you know, my God project is really a failure, you know. You know, but it's a common trait. That's why we come here. Ichwa desha samutena. We hate Krishna and we want Krishna's position. You know, desire and hate. We desire Krishna's position, we hate him. Because he is, you know, like, in order for us to be in the top of the hill, we have to knock down the guy who's there. Right? That was the game, no? The king of the hill. So you have to try to knock down the one who is in the top for you to be in the top, but you have to be, you're anxious about the next one who's going to try to top you, knock you down. So.
What's the remedy for that? How do you reverse it? How do you not have a God?
Transcendental knowledge. Remember, that's what Krishna tells Arjuna, that, you know, with a sort of transcendental knowledge, you cut all these sources of ignorance, you know. So we need to receive transcendental knowledge, because that puts the things in perspective. It's like, oh, that's how it is. Now it makes sense. Like, you know, I'm an eternal servant of God. I'm a spirit soul. I'm not supposed to live here. You know, the whole thing, you start to, you know, like, and it makes sense. So then once you have transcendental knowledge, for us, it's, okay, now that I have it, I understand it. Now it's just try to deal to eliminate the condition, the conditioning of that this body brings, you know, all the propensities. Try to curb those things by applying transcendental knowledge. So, you know, so that's what helps us. Obviously, you receive transcendental knowledge, but you have to apply it. And obviously, how you apply it, you have to have, how you receive it and how you guide it, you know, you need someone to, you know, teach you. You need a guru. It is Krishna's system. There's no way around. You know, Krishna says, Tadbidhi Pranipratena. You want transcendental knowledge? You approach a spiritual master. So, well, Krishna, my mother used to say, why do you need a spiritual master? You know, within, you know, many people believe that, you know, that you can learn all those things, you know, they're in you. You know, they're in there and you get them. But that's not Krishna's system. He's the one who designed the whole thing. So he's telling us not, you know, to learn it from within the heart or through your life or to figure it out yourself. No, it's not figure it out yourself. It's Tadbidhi Panipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya. You approach a spiritual master and serve him with humility and with submissiveness and inquire in that mood to be guided. Yeah, he's the guru of the world too. He's Krishna's representative. So Krishna's representatives have the purpose of leading the world back home, back to Godhead.
So why Krishna does all these arrangements, they either come himself or send his representative, his sons, to this world, because there's a great diversity of people in so many diversities of levels of consciousness, and Krishna makes facilities for all of them. So Lord Jesus is one of those such, you know. Correct. And they all preach, you know, God consciousness. And they all use revealed scriptures, which is a means by which, you know, God teaches, you know, the laws of the universe, so we can live in order, you know, in harmony with its laws. And when we live in harmony with his laws, then naturally our consciousness, you know, becomes Krishna consciousness. That's just the path. It all leads us to that. That's what the karma kanda part of the Vedas also, you know, they lead people at the end. It's a path that will lead, that is progressive, that it will lead you to, you know, eventually to Krishna consciousness. That's what, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita is called the yoga ladder. It's a progressive path. So you get that in all revealed scriptures. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu, you kind of pretty much answered my question. I'll still try to ask a similar one. When you were saying, Ravindra Saru said we all have our God project, we're all trying to be God, because you were mentioning the self-proclaimed God, Jimmy. And I was going to mention that point, but I have a joke that I always kind of tell devotees, is that one thing I appreciate about Krishna is that the reason he's happy all the time is because he's the supreme controller, just like on a battlefield. Have you ever seen anyone smile on a battlefield? And the reason is because he's a supreme controller. He can press the pause button, but Arjuna is in anxiety because you don't know what's going to happen. That's kind of our situation. But one aspect of being a supreme controller is that we also... I kind of asked a similar question like a few weeks ago. One aspect of thinking ourselves the controller, like, that's why we're not happy all the time, because we don't have control. We become angry or depressed, this or that. But is that we think we could see, we're seers of everything on the outside and on the inside. Just like I would mention, and jumping to conclusions, like, I'll just give an example. I'll give another example from what I did a few weeks ago, like Hiranyakashipu. When Hiranyakashipu learned that his son was, you know, learning devotional principles, he asked him, you know, what's the best thing you learned? And Prahlad said, worship God. So then Hiranyakashipu accused, what are the names? Armarka and Sananda. He accused Prahlad's demoniac teachers of teaching them devotional principles. And normally somebody like that would kill, you know, somebody. They wouldn't believe him. So he jumped to a conclusion. That's kind of our circumstance. So my question is related to this point, is that when you're trying to associate with devotees, you can't prevent others from jumping to conclusions. They may accuse you of something, or I know what your consciousness was, I know why you did this, all this stuff. We can't prevent that. My question is that I think what causes a lot of people anxiety is when they try to prove to people, oh, that's not my perspective, or that's not what I meant, or even if somebody did make a mistake, a genuine mistake, a lot of times people hold it against them. Oh, you made a mistake. So what should our disposition be from our perspective? If I think that's what causes a lot of people anxiety, you know, okay, you're falsely accusing me, or I made a mistake and you're not forgiving me. And that causes a lot of people anxiety. So what should that somebody in that circumstance's disposition be, you know? Because that, you know, that kind of ruins their whole devotional consciousness, is that their happiness dependent on whether somebody believes them, or, you know, whether they forgive them or whatever. So can you kind of answer that perspective a little bit?
You can try to join the effort that we're working here very hard to have an ashram that is built. Yesterday we were discussing, you know, an atmosphere of love and trust, an atmosphere of not of appreciating and respecting
of tolerating, of humility, you know. And so you don't have to be necessarily, you cultivate in the devotees the not, you know, to, you know, these traits of jumping to conclusions, criticizing, accusing. Those are very immature manifestations of, you know, a personality of character, you know. And being a devotee or not, those are things that are, you know, that in a community that is cultivating more seriously, it becomes a less on an occurrence. And if it occurs, then you understand it's immature, and you tolerate. So, you know, like that, you don't become too, you know, it's like children. Children may say, you know, something immature. You see children, you know, like fighting with each other in kindergarten, you know, and someone saying, your mama is blah, 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 blah. So, you know, the teacher correct them and try to educate him. So that's that. And so with things that are manifestation of extreme immaturity, why given so much attention? Rather, you know, we should show, you know, a mature approach to immaturity, which is, you know, tolerance, respect, humility, these things. So we ourselves will manifest that. And that will make us, just to say, that will make us, yeah, that's when you see a devotee who is cultivating these qualities, the devotee is always happy, you know. So not only Krishna is always happy because he's a supreme controller, but the devotee is happy because he is, you know, in the position of understanding that he is not the controller, Krishna is the controller, and he's just a servant of Krishna. So you're happy too, you know, in that position. When we are unhappy, means that our Krishna consciousness is our, you know, the meter of our Krishna consciousness at that time is taking a dip. So we have to, oh, okay. Unhappiness, conflicts, disharmony, division, all these things are symptoms of lack of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is, you know, this harmony, there is a connection, there is all these good, you know, things that are stable, you know. So we can see it in ourselves. Okay, I'm unhappy. That means that there's something that I'm, you know, seeing through the bodily conception of life.
Like that. I really appreciate that answer, because I kind of have a not a question, but kind of like a, that's kind of in harmony with your answer, is that you were mentioning these stages are from immaturity and stuff. So a lot of times we hear that Krishna is the ability. He says, "I'm the ability man." So he gives us that ability to not be immature, to tolerate and stuff. And you kind of mentioned in the symptoms is that we're lack of Krishna consciousness. So that's kind of the direction I'm going, is that when we say lack of Krishna consciousness, does that mean like the reason Krishna hasn't given us the ability to tolerate is because we do commit offenses unprovoked, you know, unprovoked, and that's the reason. I mean, there's so many examples that the reason Krishna doesn't give people the ability is because you're committing offenses, and that's why you're not happy in your Krishna consciousness. So is that kind of the direction I was thinking?
Yeah, going, yeah, it could be explained like that. That what blocks you to be introspective and to be able to, and to be progressive, is offenses. Yes, anarthas just like blinds us. So we have to actively cultivate the qualities of a devotee. And is an impossible task on our own. That's why we need the association of devotees. That's what, you know, is Srila Rupa Goswami mentioned it over and over, you know. And the definition of a devotee in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a sat sadhu. What is it? A sat sangatyaga. Yes, that the devotee is someone who avoids the association with asat. You know, so with materialistic things. So you know, we have to actively cultivate these things. You can get caught, you know, on, oh, so someone is having, you know, a difficulty in applying these things, and then, oh, too, you know, like, you know, no, we see ourselves. If I get affected, oh, maybe I'm, what is in me that I'm, you know, getting stirred in there, you know. So you always progress the introspective, you know, cultivating things. And I'm going to stop here. Oh, Krishna Archana.
In the class, you had identified the particular way in which an incarnation could be verified, or an incarnation of Krishna could be verified, and that was the ability to manifest the universal form. So, if there's, let's say, an example of a self-proclaimed if let's say been exposed to the particular group that was having a leader who was a self-proclaimed second coming of Christ individual, then the verification for that has to come from the scriptures that deal with that particular prediction. So the group that's espousing their particular leader as having fulfilled the check marks for being that second Christ in this particular age, what we got exposed to was that the group was drawing from stories in the scriptures that have hidden meanings, and their view was that within those parables there are understanding the hidden meanings, which point that here is the entity that has explained all these hidden meanings. So, you know, when one is coming from the Vedic standpoint and witnessing that, it would be difficult to sort of cross paradigms to explain that, you know, for in the Vedas, the check for an incarnation of Krishna is the ability to manifest a particular mystic opulence when the persons are talking more on the symbolic level and, you know, extrapolating from symbolism. So I don't know how the solution is to bridge the gap where in such a situation. So perhaps that would be the question.
Yeah, so therefore we have this three system of check. What is it? Three checking sadhu, sadhu shastra, guru sadhu and shastra. What is it? Something like that. So there's these three elements that confirms. They all have to be in alignment. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. To understand the meaning of the scriptures. So, you know, you can take anything in the scripture and, I mean, people, that's what people does. And then make a claim. So, but at the end, you know, these persons, their claim at one, because, I mean, at one point it have to become very clear that they're just cheaters. Like this person is claiming that he's immortal. He won't die. I want to see that when it happens. You know, that the body is going to die. Like Satya Sai Baba, he died. You know. It becomes very clear that it becomes clear for them that they're cheating. They're cheating others. They're cheating others for a particular purpose. You know, to experience this God project, you know, to experience being the center of everything. And they consider to be the worst, the most sinful persons, actually, when they take this position and cheat people in this way. So, what can you do? It's what you did. You just, you know, like Hare Krishna, walk away, you know. And the poor people, you feel sorry about them, the ones that are following faithfully a cheater, you know. So, and what can we do for that? You know, we have to preach transcendental knowledge, you know, do the effort. So that's why book distribution, Harinam, all these activities of Sankirtan are meant to benedict the world with transcendental knowledge. So, something. Okay, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Oh, Prabhus and Matajis. Today we celebrate in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami's appearance. We had a program at noon. 11:30, we're going to have some reading, the pastimes of Lord Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and then Pushpanjali ceremony. So please participate, be here to glorify our Param Guru, the appearance. Thank you. Hari Bol. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj ki jai.